activity to be used as justification or weaponized to perpetuate violence against Palestinians in Gaza. I want the opposite. I want peace. I want reconciliation. And in that moment in time, that was not a story that was being told. The narrative was very different, and that's why we made the film.
And Liat, your message to the world 2 years later, your feelings today?
Well, it's very difficult speaking after watching parts of the film. The voice of Hindra Jab, really, it's so moving and touching. And I think that the most important thing that people remember is that there aren't any conflicts that are unsolvable. It's just a matter of people wanting to speak to each other and wanting to listen and to understand each other's stories, and that if we don't do that, we're just allowing violence to take over. And like my dad says in the film and in the parts that we saw, more violence and more killing aren't going to get us anywhere.
We're going to do part two and post online at democracynow.org. Liat Benin-Atsili, held by Hamas for 54 days. Brandon Kramer, director of Holding Liat.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The nominating committee meets on the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
In partnership with the World Arts Foundation, KBOO presents a live broadcast of Keep Alive the Dream from 11 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. at the Life Change Church in Portland. The annual tribute to Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. celebrates his legacy through community, reflection, and highlighting Black achievement. Information is available at worldartsfoundation.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, new details emerge in the Customs and Border Protection shooting of two in East Portland.
Portlanders plan vigils and protests in response to ICE violence.
And a new report shows federal immigration agents continue to use Washington State driver's license data to make ICE arrests.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, January 9th, 2026. I'm Carmel Pierre-Louis.
And I'm Sam Bowman. Border Patrol agents shot two people in East Portland on Thursday, one day after the fatal shooting of Renee Good in Minneapolis by an Immigration and Customs Enforcement officer. Luis David Nico Moncada and Yor Lenis Betsabeth Zambrano Contreras, who are married, were shot and injured during a traffic stop outside of Adventist Health Portland. The couple then drove 2 miles away before calling for medical attention outside of the Bria Apartments in southeast Portland. The two victims are currently hospitalized in stable condition, and both are in federal custody. The Department of Homeland Security issued a statement on social media claiming the victims had been members of the Tren de Aragua Gang, or TDA, and had been involved in a shooting. Portland Police Chief Bob Day said that, quote, they do have some nexus of involvement to TDA, end quote. He mentioned that regional partners were investigating the involvement prior to the Border Patrol shooting. He also said, quote, I hesitated to even share this information initially because I am very aware of the historic injustice of victim blaming, often portrayed by law enforcement, including this very agency that I've represented so proudly for so many years, end quote. He continued, quote, this in no way draws a through line to the actions or the behaviors that occurred yesterday, end quote. Chief Day also said, quote, I want to speak specifically to the Latino community. It saddens me that we even have to qualify these remarks because I understand, or at least attempted to understand through your voices, your concern, your fear, your anger. This information is in no way meant to disparage or to condone or to support or agree with any of the actions that occurred yesterday, but it is important that we stay committed to the rule of law, that we stay committed to the facts, that we remain a trustworthy and legitimate police department for all Portlanders, end quote. Portland Mayor Keith Wilson issued a statement Thursday afternoon saying, quote, we cannot sit by while constitutional protections erode and bloodshed mounts. Portland is not a training ground for militarized agents, and the full force threatened by the administration has deadly consequences. As mayor, I call on ICE to end all operations in Portland until a full investigation can be completed, end quote. The FBI is leading the investigation into the shooting. Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield says his office will investigate it as well.
Hundreds of Portlanders turned out to protest last night in response to the news of the Customs and Border Protection shooting. Portland Democratic Socialists of America organized a vigil at City Hall, with hundreds hearing speeches from city councilors and organizers. They held candles and called for ICE to be kicked out of Portland for good. Others protested at the ICE facility on the South Waterfront. Portland police arrested six people over the course of the night. More actions are planned for later tonight and this weekend. Portland Contra las Deportaciones is organizing a rally at Elizabeth Carruthers Park this evening at 6:30 p.m. with a march to the ICE facility planned. On Sunday, Clear Clinic, Portland Immigrant Rights Coalition, and other groups will hold a vigil for victims and survivors of ICE and Border Patrol violence across from City Hall at 4 p.m. Later in the evening, East Portland Invisible will hold its own vigil near the site of the shooting at the corner of the Southeast North 96th Avenue and Main Street at 6 p.m.
Federal immigration agencies have continued to use Washington driver's license data to make arrests in that state, according to a new report from the University of Washington. The Department of Licensing is already embroiled in controversy after similar findings last summer. Isabel Charlet has the details.
Driver's license data from Washington State is still flowing to federal immigration agents despite promises to cut off that access, a new report reveals. Researchers have confirmed that in late 2025, federal agencies used the state system to query driver data in at least nine cases that led to arrests. Angelina Godoy is the director of the University of Washington Center for Human Rights and the principal author of the report. She says there are legitimate reasons why law enforcement agencies might need access to Department of Licensing data, but enforcement of civil immigration policy is not one of them.
Regardless of how one slices and dices the law, it's very clearly in contradiction to the stated policies articulated by multiple state agencies and articulated very clearly in state law. This is not what Washingtonians have been promised.
Godoy explains this is not the first time. Federal immigration agencies accessed a licensing database last summer, and in 2018, department employees routinely shared driver's license information with them. The Department of Licensing and Washington State Patrol say they have already taken steps to protect the data and deny breaking any laws. Godoy says in November, state officials did block one specific branch of ICE from using the system. However, the report finds that access for Customs and Border Protection was never interrupted. Godoy says many of the people arrested through this data sharing had no criminal record, and one was beaten by agents on the side of the road.
This is a real harm being done to our families here in Washington. There are a lot of people who are living in fear because of these practices, and we all as Washingtonians deserve better.
The report's authors are calling on state officials to completely block all immigration agencies from accessing this data, to be fully transparent about what's being shared, and to create a process for accountability. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
A new report reveals Immigration and Custom Enforcement is separating detained parents from their children prior to the deportations. Migrant advocates say that a violation of the U.S. immigration policy and that the unprecedented pace of deportation has left many parents unable to access legal counsel. Catherine Carley reports.
Recent interviews with some of the hundreds of deportees arriving daily in Honduras reveal parents are not even given the chance to arrange child care prior to their removal. Zane Lakhani with the Women's Refugee Commission says that's a violation of U.S. immigration policy.
We spoke with dozens and dozens of parents who were coming off the plane, some inconsolable because they did not know where their children are, the vast majority of whom had never been asked if they had children at the time that they were arrested.
Despite a directive implemented last year that weakens protections for non-citizen parents, Lakhani says ICE is still required to ask anyone they arrest if they are a parent and document that information. Lakhani says non-citizen parents and their children have always faced separation due to deportation, but what they're seeing now is unprecedented. She says the government previously provided information about family separations, but there is now a lack of transparency. She says the rapid rate at which people are being deported also makes it nearly impossible for them to access legal counsel or other resources. Lakhani stresses what's happening now is why parental interest policies were created.
To ensure that there was monitoring, tracking that parents could maintain their relationships with their children if they were arrested and subject to enforcement, they could maintain some sort of connection with their children. That is what we are seeing violated.
Lakhani says her organization is working with social service providers, child welfare agencies, and other professionals in foreign countries to fill in information gaps and develop comprehensive tracking systems. She emphasizes these separations represent policy choices rather than necessities and argues the government should uphold policies designed to preserve family unity, regardless of citizenship status. For Commonwealth News Service, I'm Catherine Carley.
Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, theoretically cannot enter someone's home without a warrant. But the agency is using other tactics to get to its targets. For example, ICE agents have altered license plates and placed Mexican flag stickers on their vehicles to try to lure in and trap people. Now, Oregon utilities are trying to ensure their customers do not mistake ICE agents for their employees, undercutting one of ICE's latest tricks. In December, Northwest Natural published guidance in 7 different languages on how to identify if someone is really one of their employees. Portland General Electric has similar guidance on its website. Northwest Natural employees wear a uniform and a badge that says contractor, and they never ask for immediate access to a customer's home. Its workers typically ask for access to a back or side yard to access a meter, the guidance says. Representative Ricky Ruiz, a Democrat from Gresham, said he was already concerned about scammers going door-to-door taking people's money. Ruiz says 3 people in his city were detained after ICE agents posed as utility workers. The federal government has brought ICE agents from around the country to Portland as part of what they're calling Operation Black Rose. Its agents use surveillance technology to locate and detain people, often stopping people in their vehicles and using violence, according to the Portland-based immigration law firm Innovation Law Lab. Several Democratic lawmakers have indicated they plan to sponsor bills addressing federal immigration enforcement in the state. Ruiz says he will sponsor legislation to support lawsuits against federal agents if they come into a person's home without warrants. He also plans a bill to prevent ICE agents from wearing masks.
The nation is divided by a citizen's killing by an ICE officer. A group of Senate Republicans bunk Trump on a Venezuela war powers vote. In the U.S., House votes to extend ACA. Insurance subsides with the story and more. It's Zamon Perez with 2026 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The president stands with ICE. I stand with ICE. We stand with all of our law enforcement officers.
Vice President J.D. Vance is defending the ICE officer who killed Renee Nicole Good in Minneapolis on Wednesday, saying Good had attempted to run over officers with her car. But many, including the mayor, say widely shared cell phone video directly contradicts that and shows Good was no threat. The death of a citizen during an immigration raid has sparked outrage and protests. Officers were also confronted outside a Minnesota high school by students, who they tear gassed. Initially, the FBI had said it would cooperate with local police on the case, but Thursday barred Minnesota state investigators from accessing the evidence. Reverend Susie Hayward of the Minneapolis Creekside United Church of Christ condemned the immigration raids and the killing of Good, which leaves three children without their mother.
We have always prided ourselves as a country in being a place that offers refuge to those escaping forms of violence. And in Minnesota especially, we are blessed by the incredible refugee and immigrant communities who have been here.
The U.S. Senate has delivered a stinging rebuke of President Donald Trump's military attack on Venezuela. Joining all Democrats, five Republicans supported legislation to force Trump to get congressional approval before further operations in the oil-rich country. That's a stark reversal from November, when a similar war powers vote about airstrikes on alleged drug boats failed, with only two in the GOP supporting it. Virginia Democratic Senator Tim Kaine calls the vote an important move to force foreign policy transparency on an administration that is discussing an invasion of Greenland.
None of us should want this president or any president taking our sons and daughters to war without notice, consultation, debate, and vote in Congress. This was a big win today for this principle that this needs to be taken out of the skiff and put before the American public.
Trump harshly criticized the five Republicans who voted with Kaine, calling them stupid and saying they should lose their seats. The House yesterday passed legislation to extend Affordable Care Act tax credits for 3 years. 17 Republicans joined Democrats to vote in favor, but it's unlikely to pass the Senate. Analysts say without the subsidies that expired at the end of the year, higher premiums will push many of the 24 million people with ACA insurance to drop their coverage. Justin Carter lives in Columbus and just aged out of his parents' plan. He says the premium increases forced him to cancel his health insurance, even though he really didn't want to.
You're always one injury away from having, you know, crippling medical debt or, you know, anything like that peering over your shoulder, which you don't want to have.
The Congressional Budget Office estimates a 3-year extension would cost about $80 billion. Republican opponents of extending the subsidies call them too costly and argue for more anti-fraud measures and tighter income restrictions. I'm Simone Perez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, Once Upon a Time. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of 39 degrees. There is an air stagnation advisory in effect for the Willamette Valley through midday Sunday, which may impact people with respiratory problems. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy with a high of 48. Today in history, in 1908, French philosopher and author Simone de Beauvoir was born. She had a significant impact on feminist existentialism and feminist theory. She's perhaps best known for her work, The Second Sex. The quote of the day is from de Beauvoir, who said, quote, "Self-knowledge is no guarantee of happiness, but it is on the side of happiness and can supply the courage to fight for it."
Tribes and Native groups are raising concerns over ICE activity in Minnesota after ICE agents killed legal observer Renee Nicole Good. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribes are raising concerns about ICE activity and the safety of their tribal citizens living in the Twin Cities after 37-year-old Renee Good was fatally shot by an ICE agent Wednesday in South Minneapolis. The Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, White Earth Nation, Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, and Red Lake Nation have issued releases expressing remorse for Good and her family. A number of Native groups have also extended their condolences, including the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition and Native Women Running. The restaurant Owamni by sous chef Sean Sherman in Minneapolis closed after the shooting. In a social media post, it said it will reopen with a portion of sales this weekend being donated to Good's family. Tribes are encouraging their citizens to report any interactions with ICE to them, to be mindful of their surroundings, carry identification, including tribal IDs, and to check in on elders and relatives in the Twin Cities. The Red Lake Nation is condemning the shooting, saying President Trump must be held accountable for his, quote, war of retribution, and that it has 8,000 members living in the Twin Cities where, quote, ICE is presently terrorizing residents. The Trump administration is justifying the shooting while city and state leaders disagree. The mayor wants ICE to get out of Minneapolis, and so does Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, who's White Earth. On national television during an interview with ABC News Thursday night, Flanagan said, it's time for ICE to get out of Minnesota, to leave them alone, and that enough is enough. Meanwhile, in South Dakota, the Oglala Sioux tribe is also raising concerns about its tribal citizens living in the Twin Cities. In an advisory to tribal citizens, OST President Frank Starr comes out said he has been made aware that ICE detained 4 of their tribal members in Minneapolis. He said tribal attorneys have been instructed to reach out to Flanagan and work toward their release. The advisory to Oglala Lakota citizens also includes how to handle ICE interactions and to contact Starr Comes Out or other officials with the tribe immediately. A Portland organization involved with missing and murdered Indigenous people awareness and advocacy is holding volunteer training. Brian Bull of Buffalo's Fire reports on what people should expect should they participate in MMIP events.
For roughly a year and a half, MMIW Search and Hope Alliance has conducted searches and events that support their community. Founder Kimberly Linning says they rely heavily on volunteers to get things done across the region. Besides being physically fit for hiking, marches, and distributing materials, Linning says it's also important that people are emotionally mature and tough.
How they handle stress, how they handle dealing with confrontation, because a lot of times we're dealing with devastated families. Sometimes their anger can be directed at us, and it's not personal. It's because the families are under so much pressure.
Linning says a common misperception is that volunteering with groups like hers is some kind of true crime adventure, or that all they do is search for bodies. She says most MMIP cases result in finding people who are alive, but even then, there can be challenging situations.
A lot of times, they're struggling from an addiction, so we kind of look at that aspect. Hey, do you need to get into detox? Would you like to go here? Do you want to speak to your family? We really encourage the missing that we find to call home, call their family, and we offer to give them that resource.
Volunteers with special skills such as scuba diving, rappelling, or operating drones are great, Linning adds. The MMIW Search and Hope Alliance's training will be held in Gresham, Oregon on January 10th. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Amazon's data centers are worsening the groundwater pollution crisis in eastern Oregon, according to residents. Over 30 data centers have been built in Boardman since 2011, and their wastewater comes with toxic levels of nitrates, which have been linked to cancer and other serious health issues. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
The recent boom of Amazon data centers in eastern Oregon is worsening the groundwater pollution and failing to provide promised benefits to the community, according to some residents. Since 2011, over 30 data centers have been built in Boardman, Oregon. The town's groundwater has had a long-standing nitrate problem, largely from industrial agriculture. Local activist and rancher Jim Doherty explains the facilities use this contaminated water for cooling. The process heats the water, concentrates the toxins, and the resulting wastewater is spread on farmland, re-entering the groundwater.
They, by themselves, are not creating the nitrates, but where we already have an issue out here, they're exacerbating it about tenfold once they go through and concentrate it in the data centers.
Doherty says locals in the area report unusually high rates of miscarriages, cancer, and other illnesses linked to nitrate exposure. Amazon says the volume of water they use is not enough to have any meaningful impact on water quality. Doherty explains rural communities want to welcome data centers largely because of the significant tax revenue they bring in. Amazon has generated commercial taxes for the county worth more than $100 million over the course of a decade. But Doherty says the locals do not see the benefits.
These funds are just not finding their way into the health and welfare of the general population. So when you go around and you ask folks, hey, is your life better that they're here? And it's just simply not.
Local officials have offered Amazon a 15-year tax abatement for each data center it built, worth billions to the company. But Doherty is concerned because there's no system in place to force Amazon to start paying the full rate after the 15 years is up, or even deconstruct their data centers once they move on.
Why wouldn't they just pack up and move to Hermiston and start a new one there for 15 years and walk away from the one that's there? I think there's just a lot of challenges.
Amazon has been warned of a pending class action lawsuit linked to the nitrate pollution, and there are indications that they may seek a pre-trial settlement. This story was produced with original reporting by Sean Patrick Cooper with Food Environmental Research Network. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
Many environmental and wildlife groups are pushing back on Trump administration policies they believe could do permanent damage. Others who are more supportive of the administration believe economic growth and environmental protection can be achieved without causing harm. A nonprofit launched last year believes there's middle ground, Roz Brown reports.
There was a time in the U.S. when support for nature and conservation was as American as apple pie. It's more partisan now, and one group wants Congress to help reduce the divisiveness. 60 years ago, there was almost unanimous support by lawmakers for passage of the 1964 Wilderness Act and for the 1973 Endangered Species Act. Now, while many Democrats still support the laws, some Republicans in Congress want to weaken both. The group Nature is Nonpartisan launched last year to address the issue, with the goal of reviving a more impartial environmental legacy. The group's Amelia Joy says the partisan back and forth has left communities behind.
If there's anything that we can agree on, it's nature, it's stewardship, it's that our kids and our grandkids should be able to enjoy the same natural beauty that we do. And that's a point that no one can disagree with.
Nature is Nonpartisan supports the Senate Stewardship Caucus launched in 2025 by a bipartisan group of U.S. senators, including New Mexico's Martin Heinrich. The caucus adopted a goal to advance bipartisan efforts aimed at protecting and expanding access to public lands and waters. It also promotes recovering wildlife through common sense policies that support conservation, habitat restoration, and economic benefits for rural communities. According to Joy, 60 years ago, 80 to 90% of Americans self-identified as environmentalists. Now, polls show only 40% make that claim. She believes depoliticizing environmental and conservation issues would foster bipartisan solutions for public lands and natural resources.
When we talk to people about the actual issues, a sweeping majority, 90% plus of Americans, agree that the government has an obligation to ensure that all Americans have access to clean drinking water, that they have clean air, that we need to be protecting our endangered wildlife species.
Since returning to the White House for a second term, President Donald Trump has supported various policies to open up public lands for commercial development by the oil and gas, mining, and timber industries, while transferring management of some national park sites to states. It's likely that financial constraints would then force some states to sell park lands to the highest bidder. This is Roz Brown, New Mexico News Connection.
Major League Table Tennis has only been around for 3 years, but it's already making waves as a professional league with its unique format. The Portland Paddlers will face three different teams over the weekend in matches at the Portland Convention Center. KBOO's Althea Billings has more.
Major League Table Tennis is coming to Portland this weekend, with the home team, the Portland Paddlers, taking on the Texas Smash, Atlanta Blazers, and Los Angeles Spinners. The league was started in 2023, and it's the first professional table tennis league in the U.S. It features players from around the world in singles, doubles, and co-ed matches. Mimi Bosica is the senior vice president of competition for the league, but she was once a junior champion and U.S. Open youth silver medalist in the sport herself.
I started when I was 6 years old back in Europe. My father was a coach. He coached the U.S. Olympic team. So it was a very serious endeavor for me my whole life. I pretty much trained year-round, sometimes during the summertime, we'd have two practices per day, 6 hours a day, and I competed at the highest level. And honestly, I didn't have the opportunity that some of these players from the U.S. have now through Major League Table Tennis. There was nothing professional in the United States where I could have continued to compete well into my late 20s, early 30s. There was no, you know, career pathway for me. So that's why you see on my resume, I have a lot of junior and youth championships. But once it was time to go to college, I had to do that because there was no really future for me in table tennis.
Bosica says the competition is intense with highly skilled players and Olympians going toe-to-toe.
So a lot of people will say, oh yeah, I've seen how they hit fast on TV at the Olympics. But really, when you're up close, 5 or 10 feet away from the table, you really realize the athleticism of these athletes. The balls go incredibly fast. There's a ton of spin that you can't really see on television. It will look very easy what these players are doing, and it's insanely hard. So look for a lot of spin, a lot of speed. They go far from the table, close to the table. There are a lot of long, exciting points.
And as far as whether to call the sport table tennis or ping pong,
it depends on who you ask. I am indifferent. As long as people are into it and participating and loving it, they can call it whatever they want.
Major League Table Tennis is hosting matches at the Portland Convention Center through the weekend. More information is online at mltt.com. For KBOO News, I'm Althea Billings.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, January 9th, 2026. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Anna Wilcox and Josh Salem. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Jasmine Moss. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Roz Brown, Catherine Carley, and Antonia Gonzalez. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.a. Podcast of this newscast is FM/Evening News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM K282BH Philomath on